Good, so it's Parshas Korach. You have Chumash in front of you, it's page 820. Before we start, I want to just wish Rona a long life on the recent passing of a sister in Johannesburg. In Johannesburg, right? What was her name?
Shlomis.
Shlomis Bat David. Bat David, yeah. Hashem should have an aliyah, and you should only be blessed with good things and long life. So, this week is Parshas Korach, and this Shabbos is also Gimel Tammuz, the third day of Tammuz, which is the 28th Yahrzeit of the Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe. So I want to dedicate the shir to him. For me, it's also a personal thing. I was many years by him, many years in Yeshiva, many years around him. So I want to share with you, we're going to talk about Korach, but then at the end I'll share with you a talk that he gave on Korach, which in a way also very highlights his whole view and things, and very much part of his leadership. So Parshas Korach is, we know, starts off with the machlekes, the dispute between Korach against Moshe Rabbeinu, and Korach together with his group. At the end, when the Yidden complain after the Korach's people were punished, Hashem brings a plague against the Jewish people. First of all, we have the challenge that Moshe Rabbeinu gave them in terms of, if you want to prove that you can be Kohanim, then you have to bring Ketores, you have to bring incense in the Mishkan, which happens, and it ended in a disaster where many of the people who brought Ketores were consumed with fire, Korach and his family were swallowed up by the earth, and so on. Hashem then says to take the machtos, to take the pans that were used for the ketores, and to make them into a covering for the mizbeach. Then the people complained that Hashem had brought punishment upon the people, and there was a plague that broke out. And Aaron was commanded by Moshe Rabbeinu to stop the plague by taking a pan of ketores also and going and offering it up in the midst of the people where they were falling, and the plague stopped. Hashem then wanted to prove and make a sign that the kahuna, the priesthood of Aaron HaKohen, is eternal. So he told Moshe Rabbeinu to collect all the sticks from the different tribes. Each tribe had to present the stick of their leader. They all went put in the Mishkan, and the next day the stick of Aaron, the staff of Aaron, miraculously grew almonds and flowers and so on. That was a sign of Aaron's kahuna, Aaron being the authentic one who was appointed for the leadership of the kahuna to be the Kohen Gadol, etc. In this parasha, we also have the mitzvah of guarding the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash. When there was a Beis HaMikdash, there was always guards around the Beis HaMikdash each night, and so on. That comes from this week's parasha. We also have the 24 Matnois Kahuna, the 24 gifts that were given to Kohanim. We know that Kohanim and Levim did not have a portion in the land of Israel, Shevet Levi, so they were sustained mostly by the gifts that were given to them by the people. The Kohanim had 24 of these gifts, Trumas Meiser, they had to get a certain portion of each animal, they were given wool, the first shearing of a wool of a sheep was always given to the Kohanim, and so on and so forth, a total of 24, and that's what sort of sustained them. Okay. Just before we go into what I'm going to go into, so a couple of interesting things about Korach. So, the name of the parasha is Korach, right? But we find in the writings of Reb Chaim Palagi. Reb Chaim Palagi was a very, very great Sephardic sage who seemed in his writings never to refer to the parasha of Korach as Parshas Korach. Because Korach was a Rasha, Korach was a wicked man, right? So he never did that. So he would say, like, have a look in Parshas Ben Levi. Because Korach was a Levi, right? And there were other ways that people used to refer to it as in the Kaf HaChaim, it's wrote down that some people would refer to it as Ben Kohos. Korach was a grandson of Kohos, so the Parsha was called Ben Kohos and so on, right? Which is interesting. No one else does that, which does in fact beg the question of how come we call a parsha after a wicked person, right? There's not many parshas like that. The two parshas we have that question is Korach and Balak, 2 weeks apart, right? Balak is also called after Russia. Well, over there, there's much more, there's many answers, because it brings out the love that Hashem had to the Yidden, that Balak threatened us, and he couldn't overcome us, and so on. Why talk of Korach? So one of the reasons is, Korach, in fact, was a tzaddik. Korach was a person who was a great person, but he made a mistake. And in fact, one of the reasons, the Rebbe points out, that one of the reasons we call Parshas Korach, Korach, is because in essence, what he wanted wasn't bad. He wanted to become a Kohen Gadol. To want spiritual greatness is a good thing. The ambition of spiritual greatness is a good thing. But you also have to know that not everything you can get. So to want to be a Kohen, that's a good thing. To then put it into practice and to oppose Moshe Rabbeinu and to undermine him and to say, I want to be a Kohen Gadol, that was problematic and that, of course, was wicked. But the essence of Korach wasn't a bad thing necessarily. It was a good thing. And generally we find in many, many Mefarshim all sorts of explanations about what Korach really wanted and what he was really after and so on and so forth. Okay, so that's just a little bit about the parasha. Another interesting thing I saw about Korach is that Korach was a very rich person, it says, right? Extremely wealthy person. How did he become wealthy? So it says, in the Gemara Sanhedrin says like this, that Yosef hid 3 great treasures in Mitzrayim. One of them came to Korach, right? One of them was revealed to Antoninus. He was the friend of Rebbe. He was a Roman ruler, but he became a good person. He was a ger, I think. And one of them is reserved for the tzaddikim of Mashiach Hoka. That's what it says. Now, the Ben Ish Chai says an interesting thing. He says, what do we see? See, it's interesting, right? We see that what's supposed to happen is something happens eventually. So he explains the following thing. He explains a very interesting thing. He says, what does it mean that Yosef hid these 3 treasures? He says, Yosef, the 3 treasures was the money that Yosef received when he sold the produce, right? Yosef became very rich because what happened was, Yosef took over Mitzrayim. He was the one to give the plan of storing wheat during the 7 good years, so that it should have for the 7 bad years. And during the 7 bad years, his treasury sold the wheat, sold the produce to everyone, and he made a fortune of money. So it says in the Ben Ish Chai that what happened was, but Yosef divided the money into three lots. What was the 3 lots? One group of money that he received was the money that he received from those people that serve Avodah Zorah. One of that separate, right? The second was from people who don't serve Avodah Zorah, but they're not clean people. They steal, they cheat, whatever. They're not 100% kosher money, right? And the third was some people who serve Hashem, keep the 7 mitzvahs of Bnei Noach, and they were good people, and that's the 3rd treasure. The treasure that Korach got, right? The treasure that Korach got was the treasure from people that served Avodah Zarah. Right? That was his money. So his wealth came from that treasure that he discovered of Yosef's treasure in Mitzrayim that were from people that served Avodah Zarah. Now, we know that money that comes from Avodah Zarah, you're not allowed to have any benefit from it. So, Taka, what happened to that money eventually? Korach and all of his resources, all of his wealth, was swallowed up in the ground. So, eventually, that money actually made its way to where it belongs, under the ground. Right? That's the interesting thing. That explains the other Korachs. Now, what's interesting, the reverse of that is like this. Who else do we find was very rich in Tanakh? Haman was very rich, right? Where did he get his wealth from? So, it says, Haman took money from the Malchei Yehuda, from the kings of Yehuda, right? He managed to find the wealth that was originally owned by some of the kings of the Jewish people, the kings of Yehuda, who were tzaddikim, many of them, and that was the money eventually that somehow made its way to Haman, right? So what happened to Haman's money? At the end, when he was hanged, it says in the Megillah, Hinei beis Haman nasati l'Esther. Achashverosh says that I gave the house of Haman to Esther, to Mordechai, right? So everything went back to its rightful place. So the money of Avodah Zarah landed up by Korach, but it made its way to its rightful place, which is being buried in the ground. The money of Haman was taken from Malchut Yehuda, but also made its way back to its regular place, which was the Mordechai and Esther. Interesting. One last thing before we go into what I was going to go into is, I saw a very strange, very interesting little story. So there was a great tzaddik, his name was Amram Chasido. Amram Chasido was born, I think, in Poland, I'm not sure exactly where, but he was born about 230 years ago, and he was a big makubal and a big tzaddik. So, when he was a child already, he was very, very righteous and very spiritually sensitive, very holy, and so on and so forth. So the story goes that when he was about 6 years old, he was going to cheder, and he was attacked by a non-Jew. And what the non-Jew was he sort of beat him up a shtickle, and he took off his talis cotton. He was wearing tzitzit, he took off his talis cotton. So this little boy, the Amram, he cried, and he wouldn't move, because he never sits this. He says, no, doesn't move without sits. Right? So eventually they found him, and he was hurt, but they had to go find another talis cotton for him, because he wouldn't move without a talis cotton. As he was crying, and he was really in pain, he sort of let out of his mouth, he said, I hope that non-Jew gets swallowed up by the ground. So he said. A couple of days later, the news around the city was that this guy, Taka, fell into a pit or something. He fell into the ground. And he got hurt. And they thought it was like a very sort of miraculous thing. So someone came and asked this of Amram, his little child. He says, I understand. Of all things, you were very upset with him, obviously. You were upset that he took your talis cotton. But why did you curse him with that particular thing? Like, why did you say he should fall into the ground? Why not something else? Right? He says, no, very simple. Because he learned in Cheder that Korach, right? Rashi brings it at the beginning of Rashi, the beginning of the Parsha. When Korach started his rebellion, what did he do? He came with a famous thing. He came with talis to shakula tcheles. He came with a talis that was all dyed with blue, right? That the tcheles are supposed to go into tzitzis. And he said to Moshe Rabbeinu, this talis that's full of tcheles, is it chayiv in tzitzis? Is it obligated in tzitzis or not? And Moshe Rabbeinu responded that it is. And if we started to laugh, because he said, "Wow, I mean, that's ridiculous. If one string of tcheles can or tzitzis can sort of absolve the whole beged, if the whole thing is tcheles, why can't it be covered?" So therefore, he started to laugh and started the whole rebellion. So he said this little boy said, "Listen, I was learned in cheder that Korach started to laugh in the midst of tzitzis. What happened to Korach? He fell into the ground. So I figured this guy took my talis cotton. That's why I cursed him in such a way." That's why I said, I hope he falls to the ground. And like I said, that like it happened. A few days later, he fell into the ground. Interesting story. All right. Now, so, we're going to do the pasuk inside in a minute, but, okay, no, actually, let's have a look first in the Chumash. Page 820. So it says, Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kohos ben Levi v'Dosan v'Aviram ben Eliyav Oyin ben Peles ben Reuven. All these people came and they took themselves to a side and they wanted to make a rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? Vayokumu lifnei Moshe. They got up in front of Moshe. V'Anoshim b'nei Yisrael, together with 250 people. Nesiei Eda, who were leaders. They were leaders themselves. Kriyei Moed Anshei Shem. They were men of prominence. Vayikalu al Moshe ve'al Aaron, they gathered against Moshe ve'Aaron vayomru aleim, and they said to them, Rav lachem, enough for you, you know, it's enough already, ki chol ha'elo kurum kedoshim, everyone is holy, right? U'basoichem Hashem, Hashem is amongst everyone. U'madua tisnasuhu al kahal Hashem. Why do you hold yourself superior why do you exalt yourselves against, above the rest of the nation, right? In other words, why is there one Kohen, one leader, one king? The whole thing was they challenged leadership. They challenged, we all holy, we all hold the same mitzvahs from Hashem, we all do the same thing. Why are you holy? What do we need spiritual leadership for altogether? Right? And if there's a Kohen and there's a concept of bringing a Kohen God, so we should all be Kohen and Gedolim. Right? That was the whole thing. Okay. So what does the Pasuk say? It says, Vayishma Moshe Rabbeinu heard, Vayipel al ponam, and he fell on his face. And then he said the following, Vayidaber el Korach. He spoke to Korach v'chol ha'dos, Lamer. Yeah. Boiker, wait till tomorrow morning. He says, wait till tomorrow morning. V'yoida Hashem, and Hashem will make known, Eis Asher Loi, who is the one that belongs to him. Ves HaKodesh, and who is the Holy One. V'hikriv Elov, who will become close to him. Ves Asher Yifchar Bo, Yakriv Elov, and the one who Hashem chooses, he will be the one to come close to Hashem. And says, what do I mean to wait till tomorrow morning? Wait till tomorrow morning because then you'll bring Keteiros, and you'll bring Keteiros, all of you will bring Keteiros, and you'll see which one Hashem will accept and which one he won't, right? Okay. Then the story unfolds, and then the whole machlokes, and it happens the next day, and the ketaka gets swallowed up from the ground, and the fire breaks out, and etc. etc. Okay. Why did he tell them boiker? Why did he tell them to wait till the next morning? Right. So Rashi says, he was pushing them off. Why was he pushing them off? First reason Rashi says why he said to wait till the next morning is because he was pushing them off. Maybe they'll do tshuva. They'll do tshuva, right? But the next morning, maybe they'll reconsider and they'll do tshuva, right? Okay, that's one reason. Another reason that Rashi says is Boiker told them to wait till the morning. Why? He was hinting to them something. He says, you know, just look at Hashem's world. There's night and there's day. Boiker, there's a morning, right? There's boundaries. In other words, light has its place and time. Darkness has its place and time, and they can't mix. Hashem created gevulos. He created different compartments in His world who don't necessarily mix. So too, you have to understand, says Moshe Rabbeinu, that not everyone can be everything. Hashem created different purposes, different tachlis, different roles for different people. There's one Kohen Gadol, and you can't be a Kohen Gadol. In fact, there's a Medrash that says that Moshe Rabbeinu turned to Korach and his men, and he said, Afani, I also want to be a Kohen Gadol, right? But I can't, because Hashem said no. Yeah. And we have this, throughout Yiddishkeit. We have Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim. A person can be a big tzaddik, he can be the Gadol Ador, but if he's not a Kohen, he's not a Kohen. Finished. There's nothing to talk about, right? So that's why Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, Boiker, wait till the morning. Wait till the morning, and then you'll see the morning. Just remember the concept of the morning. There's morning, there's night, there's things, everything has its purpose, everything has its place, everything has its time. Okay, we'll come back to that. Now, this is, as I said, I'm going to share with you this idea, this talk that the Rebbe gave. This is in 1962. Toshichov Beis. It's like this. First, you have to understand, when did the story of Korach actually happen? Right? So, in the chronology of the Chumash, it comes after Parsha Shlach, although that's not a proof because we know there's not necessarily a historic order to the Torah. But in the Seder Olam, which is a book, a very early book that sort of sequences when things happen in the Torah, it says that Korach Taka came after the story of the Meraglim, after the story of the spies. Now, how do we know that? How do we know that? Because if you just go to page 822, towards the end over there, Pasuk Yud Beis, Pasuk 12, right? One of the big people that were really big troublemakers there was Dosan and Aviram. Now, Dosan and Aviram were all troublemakers, right? They were troublemakers even in Mitzrayim already. But anyway, it says, Vayishlach Moshe likroi leDosan laAviram, b'nei Eliyahu. Moshe Rabbeinu went, he sent a message to call Dosan and Avira, the sons of Eliyahu. By Yoimru Loi Nala, and they were very chutzpidik, and they said, no, we're not coming to you. And then they started to talk against Moshe Rabbeinu, and they said, Hama'at ki he elisonu. Oh no, sorry, yeah. Hama'at ki elisonu, as also called Vashav, saying, Midway, is it enough that you took us out of a land of milk and honey, talking about Mitzrayim like that, to kill us in the Midbar? Kisistareir oleinu sister kamistareir. What you seek to be a leader over us, you seek to be exalted over us. Who are you anyways? And they continue in the next pasuk and they say the following. Af loyel eret zovas cholo v'dvash avi yisonu. Right? You do not even bring us into the land of flowing with milk and honey. Although you didn't bring us into the land of Eretz Yisrael. Right? Batitano nachla sodah v'kerem, to give us fields, vineyards, and so on and so forth. As Rashi explains what they were saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, you fooled us anyway. You took us out of Egypt, you promised us land of Israel, now you got us stuck here for 40 years. Right? So what does this tell us? This gives it away. When did the story of Korach happen? It was the story of the Meraglim, that already happened. Yeah? Okay. So that's the accepted view, that the story of Korach happened after the story of the Meraglim. The problem is, why? Korach had a complaint, challenged the leadership. He was jealous of the leadership of Aaron and Moshe Rabbeinu. He should have done it right away. Now, When was Aaron appointed the Kohen Gadol? When the Mishkan was built, right? So let's just run through the sequence of events. So when the Yidden left Mitzrayim. The Yidden left Mitzrayim Pesach, right? 40 days later, 49 days later they got the Torah, that was on Shavuos. 40 days later they served the golden calf, right? That was the 17th of Tammuz. 80 days later, after two sets of 40 days, was Yom Kippur, they were forgiven for the golden calf, and they got the second set of luchos. Okay. Then they started to build the Mishkan as an atonement for the Egel Azor. When was the Mishkan inaugurated? Rosh Chodesh Nisan, right? A year minus two weeks after they left Mitzrayim, right? So roughly a year after they left Egypt. It was by then, for sure, that we know that Aaron had become a Kohen Gadol, because that's what happened. There were 7 days of preparation. On the eighth day, the Mishkan was erected, and Aaron and his sons were the Kohanim, he was the Kohen Gadol. So we know he was chosen by Hashem already then. When did the Meraglim happen? So we're talking now Rosh Chodesh Nisan, right? The second year when they get Aaron Mitzrayim. When did Rosh Chodesh, so that was a year after they left Egypt. When did the Meraglim happen? The Meraglim was sent Chav Ches Sivan yesterday, right? Chav Ches Sivan after the Mishkan. This is three, right? So Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, towards the end of Sivan, 3 months later. So what's Korach waiting for? No, sorry, not even 3 months later, more than that. They sent the Meraglim Chav Ches Sivan, right? But the punishment of the Meraglim came 40 days later on Tisha B'Av. And this is after the punishment, because that's what they were complaining about, right? Dostan and Aviram were complaining about that. So we're talking about the Mishkan was put up Rosh Chodesh Nisan. You got Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, 4 months and 10 days. 4 months and 9 days, Tisha B'Av, right? So if Korach was upset about the appointment of Aaron HaKohen to be the Kohen Gadol, yeah? Why do you wait 4 months? Right? You could possibly answer that he waited for a different thing. One of the things that Rashi explains is that Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron were appointed Kohanim Gadol, Kohanim and the leader, so right? They were the sons of Amram. Korach was the son of Yitzhar. When Moshe Rabbeinu appointed leaders of the different families of the Levim, who was the one appointed the leader over Levi? Elitzofon ben Uziel. Elitzofon ben Uziel was also a Levi. He was the son of the third brother. Over the family of Kohos, I mean. Sorry. So one of the sons of Levi was Kohos, right? Kohos had four sons. Amram, Yitzhar, Elitzofon, Azuel, and so on. So Korach had the following complaint. He said, look, it's enough that Moshe and Aaron took all the greatness of the leadership. At least the next appointment should have been the son of the next son, which is Yitzhar, my father, says Korach. Instead of what does Moshe Rabbeinu do? He skips my father out. He goes to the next son of Kohos, Uziel, and appoints his son to be the leader of the tribe of Levi. Yeah? And that's when he said, enough is enough, and he's going against the rebellion. He's going to create a whole rebellion now. And he's going to challenge the whole thing. Right? So you could say that you can't ask a question, how come Korach didn't lead the rebellion right after Aaron HaKohen was appointed the Kohen? Because it didn't trigger it yet. It only really exploded later, when Elitzofan was appointed the leader of the family of Levi, right? But let's examine when that happened. So the Mishkan was up Rosh Chodesh Nisan. When were the leaders of the different Kohanim and so on, when were they appointed? A month later, Rosh Chodesh Iyar. So that's when, let's say, Korach got really angry. That still doesn't answer the question. That's still 3 months before the whole thing. Still 3 months before the Meraglim. So okay, not Rosh Chodesh Nisan, but Rosh Chodesh Iyar. So Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, and 9 days above, 3 months and 10 days. So what is he waiting for? Why do you wait so long? So the question is a big question. This is that we've established why Korach, we've established the fact that the Korach story of Korach happened after the Meraglim, creates this question, what took him so long to launch this rebellion? Right? Okay. Now, so one of the famous answers is as follows. And this is what the Rebbe explains in this particular talk. But he explains and develops it in quite a detailed way. So this is like this. Last week we had the story of the Meraglim, right? Meraglim came and they dissuaded the Jewish people from going into the land of Israel. We mentioned this last week. In a deeper level, what are the Meraglim want? So we know that in Likutei Torah, the Alter Rebbe explains that really the Meraglim weren't so bad. They actually were worried about the spiritual welfare of the Jewish people, right? What do? They were very afraid that when the Jewish people go into Israel, they are going to be involved in the mundane. In the Midbar, what they were doing, they weren't doing so many mitzvahs, but they were actually involved in spirituality. The whole day. They had the man, they were taken care of, they were protected, they heard Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu, they were studying Torah, they were just living a spiritual existence, right? Now, if they go into Eretz Yisrael, actually the upgrade will be they'll end up keeping much more mitzvahs, all the mitzvahs that are connected with the agriculture of Israel. They'll have proper foods, so they'll have all the mitzvahs that involve food and kashrus and all these things, right? So the actual physical mitzvahs will be much more in Israel, but they'll be living a very material life, right? Which will be spiritually dangerous. In fact, it was spiritually dangerous. That is true. And they even failed many times, right? So they were worried about this. So therefore what they decided was, no, they're going to actually talk the Jews out of going to Israel. Right? They're going to say, it's not a good land. You better stay here. So in other words, according to this explanation, what happened was, right? What happened was that they actually got what they wanted. They actually got exactly what they wanted. They got stuck in the desert, right? Which is what they wanted, actually. However, Moshe Rabbeinu explained to them that it was a very big avera. Why? Because they made a fundamental mistake. Notwithstanding that it's going to be more risky in Israel, which it was, but that's the purpose of creation. The purpose of creation, says Moshe Rabbeinu, is mitzvos maisios. Action mitzvahs. Mitzvahs that you do with the physical world, the actions of mitzvahs is much more important. You can learn Torah, you can learn about tefillin, you can learn about Shabbos candles, you can learn about tzedakah from today to tomorrow, but if you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah, that's not the purpose of creation. The purpose of creation, what's the rotzen Hashem? What's the will of Hashem? What's His intrinsic desire? To come into this world, to connect the physical world with Hashem. Through mitzvahs maisis, through action mitzvahs. And that was the mistake of the Meraglim. He says, that's the point that Korach was upset about. Why? So we know like this. What's the difference between the spiritual part of Yiddishkeit? When I talk about spiritual part of Yiddishkeit, I mean learning Torah, kavona, having kavona, davening, all these things, right? Or action mitzvahs. What's the difference between these two things? The difference is, when it comes to the spiritual part of Yiddishkeit, particularly when it comes to learning Torah and understanding the mitzvahs and so on and so forth, there's different levels. Not everyone understands on the same level. Huge differences. Can I compare the understanding and the insight of Moshe Rabbeinu's appreciation and knowledge of Shabbos than a simple person's knowledge of Shabbos, right? You can't compare that. However, when it comes to the more physical part of Yiddishkeit, the mitzvahs, maisis, the practical mitzvahs, there's no real levels. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillin, the same as my tefillin. Same mitzvah, right? Every woman who lights a Shabbos candle on a Friday afternoon doesn't make a difference who it is. It's the same Shabbos candle. Right? So when it comes to mitzvahs, everyone's the same, really. Correct? Korach says, ibazoi. If that's the case, then I got a problem. Up until now, says Korach, up until the Meraglim, okay? I was prepared to put up with the hierarchy of the Jewish people. I was prepared to put up with the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu is higher than me. Moshe Rabbeinu is a greater level. Aaron HaKohen is a greater level. I'm prepared to put up with all of that. Why? Because in the spiritual experiences, there are differences. Moshe Rabbeinu, you can't compare. He's Torah to our Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu, after all, was the first. Right? He was the first He heard the Torah straight from Hashem. Only then he taught it to Aaron, and then only taught it to the elders, to the masses, right? So the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was first means that his understanding of Torah was far greater than anything else. It was unbelievably greater, right? Yeah? So he says that, so I understand that. But now you're coming to tell me that what? It's not really about the spiritual experience. That was the mistake of the Meraglim. What's Yiddishkeit all about? Mitzvahs, maisis, practical mitzvahs. Practical mitzvahs. Well, if that's the case, who needs a Moshe Rabbeinu? What do we need spiritual leadership for? He says you've got to make up your mind. Which one's more important? By the way, in a different place, explains the same thing. It's interesting how we see this struggle of Korach between what's more important, the physical or the spiritual. We see it in a different way, right? We see it, you know, Rashi says in the very beginning, what did he do? He came to Moshe Rabbeinu and he presented a challenge. Two challenges. One was about tzitzis, the other one was about a mezuzah, right? Tzitzis, he says, like I said before, he said there's a whole garment. The garment is filled with tchelis. It's already dyed wool. It's dyed blue already. So you need the scissors, right? You need the strings. So they start to laugh. When Moshe Rabbeinu says, yeah, you need the strings, they start to laugh. And he says, okay, now I'll ask you a different question. He says, what happens if you have a house that's full of Torah scrolls? Right? Bayis Smolis Svarim is full of Torah scrolls, which includes the mezuzah, the shema, and everything, right? Do you still need a mezuzah on the door? So Moshe Rabbeinu says, yes, they start to laugh. Same thing, right? So they ask a question on the surface. Why don't we repeat the question? It's the same question. Same idea. Talis full of trailers, you need tzitzis. House full of svarim, you need mezuzahs, right? So why do I have to repeat the same thing again? I mean, the point was made the first time around. Why do you have to make the same argument with house and mezuzah? So, explains, no, actually these two cases are actually opposites. Why? In Kabbalah it says that the garment, which is all-encompassing, represents mitzvahs. Because mitzvahs are called makif. Mitzvahs are not things that we internalize. Mitzvahs are things that we have on ourselves, right? We wear a talus, we do a mitzvah. It's like encompassing. Strings of tzitzis represent wisdom. Because we know there are 32, in Kabbalah we talk about the lamed beis nesivus chokhma, there are 32 pathways of wisdom. When you understand something, you break it down into different pieces, you analyze it, you break it down, and so on. So he says, he came after the Meraglim and he says, well, if we have mitzvahs, if we have the beged, if we have the garment, what do we need the tzitzis for? Especially to what you just said, right? We finished with the Meraglim now. We said mitzvahs is the main thing. Well, that's the garment. So if you have garment, what do you need tzitzis for? So Moshe says, no, you misunderstand, as we're going to see later. Learning is important. So then he switches it. He says, learning is important. You can't have it both ways. Then I'm going to switch the challenge. If you have a house full of Sefer Torahs, that means what's a house full of? Learning. You still need the mitzvah. You still need mezuzah on the door. He says, an opposite challenge. The tzitzis one was, if you have mitzvahs, what do you need learning for? Because the beged is learning. The beged is mitzvah, and the tzitzis is learning. When he said you do, he says, okay, how about the other way around? If you have a house full of Sefer Torahs, you still need a mezuzah, you still need a mitzvah. So you can see the tension that the Korach couldn't put these two things together. But his main problem was that he was after the Meraglim. The Meraglim was that they said that you need mitzvahs. Mitzvahs is the most important thing. That's the Ratzon Hashem, that's the will of Hashem, right? So why do you need leadership then? What do I need a Moshe Rabbeinu for? Not only that, but Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't just like a teacher. Of course, you understand, Korach understands when you're learning, you need someone to teach you, you need someone who knows more than you. Moshe Rabbeinu was an all-encompassing leader. He was like a rebbe, he was like a tzaddik, he was the leader. He was like a melech, a king. What do I need that for? It's all about mitzvahs. Every Jew does mitzvahs. Right? So we have to understand, it's actually a logical question. It's a good question, Taka. Because that Taka was exactly what happened to Meraglim. The Meraglim, we said that the Meraglim made a terrible mistake. That living a life of spirituality, davening, learning, that's good, but that's not the purpose. The purpose is mitzvahs. So the Korach's right. If mitzvahs, taka, everyone's the same. So he was right, actually. So what's the answer to that? Right? So the Rebbe brings this pasuk we learned before. The pasuk we learned before says, And Moshe Rabbeinu told them to wait till the morning. Wait till the morning. Why the morning? So we said, Rashi says two answers. To give them time to do tshuva. And also to teach them that there's rules in the world. Right? There's Kohanim Levim and there's day and night. Yeah. Both these answers need to be understood. What does it mean Moshe Rabbeinu gave them till the morning because they could do tshuva? Tshuva is like how long is a piece of string? In other words, you can do tshuva immediately, right? I say you need more time, but you should give them a week. Everyone will do tshuva at different paces, right? If you talk about the opportunity to do tshuva, that was there right away. You could have said right away. He said, let's go bring Ketores. Hopefully they'll do tshuva within a minute, right? Oh, you want to give them time for tshuva? So then give them a week, a month, I don't know. I mean, like, why the next morning? What's the boiker idea, right? Okay, number one. Number two, if Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to point out the difference between day and night, it's brought down in many Sfarim that when they came to Moshe Rabbeinu, right, they didn't come during the night, they came during the daytime, the afternoon, let's say. So if all Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to point out that we need to understand that there's day and night and there's differences in the world, he could have said, Laila, let's wait till tonight. Never say wait till morning. Right? Wait till the night. Yeah? Okay. So what does it all mean? What do you read books? So you have to understand like this. He brings in the Kutei Torah from the Alter Rebbe, he brings an interesting thing. You know, we say, there's a phrase we use, tshuva u'maisim toivim. Right? Tshuva u'maisim toivim. What does it mean, maisim toivim, good deeds? You could say mitzvahs, wasn't it? So Alter Rebbe explains, maisim toivim means not just good actions, but the actions have to be meirim, they have to be lichtik, they have to be bright actions, holy actions. What does that mean? In other words, that a person has to do tshuva until he comes to the point where he does maisim toivim. He calls it maisim toivim umeirim. In other words, they have to be. It's got to be mitzvahs that shine. What does it mean, mitzvahs that shine? So he gives a mashal. He gives an analogy like this. You can have sometimes a very, very expensive stone, a diamond, I don't know, a crystal, whatever, a really, really, really bright stone, right? The problem is that the bright stone is covered. It's covered in mud, right? Yeah? So, it's covered in mud, so therefore, it doesn't bright, you can't see the light, it's actually dark. It creates darkness more than light, right? Because mud creates darkness. It's a heavy, heavy color, creates darkness. So not only isn't the stone is there, it's potentially a very bright stone, but it's not shining. Not only not shining, in fact, it's actually just being a vehicle for darkness, right? So explain the same thing. You can have two things in mitzvahs. You can have a mitzvah, which is like a person does without any kavana, without any feeling, without any understanding, right? Just always without any holiness, nothing. It could be even a wicked person does a mitzvah, right? Does the mitzvah exist? Yes. Mitzvah exists. Is it a shining mitzvah? No. Because we find that it's brought down in many places. If a person that says if a Russia does a mitzvah, sometimes that mitzvah actually has a counter effect. Sometimes a person learns Torah, does mitzvahs when he has terrible arrogance or he's not a good person. What the Torah mitzvahs can end up doing can end up making him worse, right? Can end up making a more arrogant person. In other words, the mitzvah is not adding any light into the world. That's not adding any bright spiritual brightness to the world. The mitzvah exists, he's done the mitzvah, but it hasn't done anything, right? Yeah? So the question is like this. If that's the case, so a person can say to themselves, hold on a second, who cares? What's a mitzvah, right? A mitzvah is that Hashem wanted us to do mitzvahs. Why does Hashem want us to do mitzvahs? Because each mitzvah we do, we take, let's say, a piece of leather, and we turn it into a piece of parchment. And we turn it into a mezuzah, right? So we've connected the piece of physicality to Hashem. And we know what's the purpose of creation, as it's always brought down in Hasidic teachings particularly, that Hashem, and the Medrash says, that Hashem wanted, Nis'av HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem had the desire to make a dira b'tachton, he wanted to dwell in this world, he wanted to live in this world, right? So when you take a piece of parchment and you fulfill Hashem's will, you put it on the door, you make a mezuzah, right? Okay, so I didn't have kavanah. So it wasn't a bright mitzvah. But I connected the piece of parchment to Hashem, so Hashem's now on the parchment. Who cares? Who cares what kind of mitzvah it is? The mitzvah is done. Yeah? So why is it so important for a mitzvah to be maistim toivim? Why is it so important for a mitzvah to be illuminated mitzvah? The answer is, because there are two things that are true at the same time. In other words, like this. The main thing of a mitzvah is the action. Hashem wanted this action should be done. That's the Ratzon Hashem. You can talk about mezuzah from 3 months, but if you don't put a mezuzah in the door, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah of Hashem. That, the mitzvah of Hashem is the action. Why does Hashem want that mitzvah? Because He wants to dwell in this world. So it's always brought down this analogy. When a person has a house, right? So you know, a house is a very intrinsic thing. The Gemara says, a person doesn't have a home, he's not a person, right? So there's a huge difference between a person who has a home and a person who doesn't have a home, right? Does it make a difference what kind of home it is? Yes, the answer is it does make a difference. Because to dwell in a house doesn't mean just to be there in the house, right? When a person is in his own home, it means he's there, he's revealed there. That's where he's most open. That's where he's most lets his guard down, right? When a person is in their own house, they're there, they're not just there. To live there doesn't only mean just to be there. Live there means I'm there with everything on me. I'm felt there. My presence is felt there. I let my guard down. I can run around the house. I can scream. I can shout. I can do whatever I want because I'm there. Right? Therefore, a mitzvah is not enough just to be a mitzvah. A mitzvah in itself is an amazing thing. A mitzvah is the Ratzon Hashem. Every time a Yid does a mitzvah, he's connected to Hashem. And he's connected himself to Hashem. And he's connected the world to Hashem. It's true. All true. But it's not enough. Because although the most important thing is the action, but the action has to be what we call a liftika action. It's got to be an action filled with kavana, with kedusha, with holiness, with feeling. Why? Because then the mitzvah is like the stone where you remove the mud and it shines. It shines, it makes it bright around you. It makes Hashem not just in the world, it makes Hashem revealed in the world. Two different things. That's why it's so important. Right? This is the answer of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu says, you got it all wrong. You came after the Meraglim. So what did you learn from the Meraglim? The Meraglim made a terrible mistake. Why? Because the main thing is mitzvahs, maaseh is action mitzvahs. You're right. But boiker, you can wait till the morning. Those mitzvahs, maaseh, those actions have to be boiker. They have to be bright, like the morning. Right? Let's go through the two things of Rashi. He says he gave him time to do tshuva. What does that mean? Either can do tshuva right away, they don't have to wait till the morning, says Moshe Rabbeinu. No. Tshuva, you can technically do 1 second. The Rambam says, if a person says, I sinned, that tshuva, that's it. Finish, we're done. But that's not a boiker tshuva. That's not a real tshuva. Real tshuva comes with feeling. Real tshuva comes with working it through, with understanding, with reflecting, with returning to Hashem, with crying, with yearning, with real connection. Boiker, like the bright sun. It's got to be a lichtiker tshuva. Hashem made compartments of the world. We can talk about the night of the day, so you could have waited till night, you didn't have to wait till the morning. But then it would have lacked the message. The whole answer of Moshe Rabbeinu is the idea of boiker. That's going to be bright mitzvahs. Mitzvahs that are imbued with learning, with feeling, with kavana, with kedusha, and so on and so forth. Right? So learning is important. Yes, mitzvahs, maaseis, are the most important thing. Mitzvahs is how you connect to Hashem. Mitzvahs is how you fulfill the purpose of creation. But it's got to be bright mitzvahs. Right? Bright mitzvahs. Bright mitzvahs, you need a lot of learning. You need kavana, you need kedusha. And for that, you need a Moshe Rabbeinu. For that, there needs to be spiritual leadership. For that, there needs to be someone who can lift you up, who can elevate you, who can show you how to get rid of your ego. I can teach you the kavana of the mitzvahs. I can bring to you higher levels who can help you climb the ladder of spiritual progress. And that's the answer to Korach. So Korach came after Meraglim because he had a good question. His whole question came because of Meraglim. Oh, because the whole thing's mitzvahs, then we're all equal. He said, Moshe, no, we're not. Because the mitzvahs have to be bright mitzvahs, and then there's different madrigas. And also for there to be bright mitzvahs, you need a Moshe Rabbeinu. You need someone who's going to teach you. He's going to elevate you. He's going to spiritualize you. Right? So that's the two things together. Now, the lesson is very important, right? It's a big lesson, this. Because we find two opposite things. We find that sometimes people think, no, you know, the mitzvah is not so important. The main thing is, you know, your heart. It's what I mean. It's my kavana. It's what I intend. No, the answer is not true. Mitzvahs are the main thing. Parashat Shlach. Parashat Shlach tells you a mitzvah is a mitzvah. You can't just have, you know, I'm a good person. I like people. I like this, that, the other. No, you have to have a mezuzah. You have to give tzedakah. You have to light Shabbos candles, right? The mitzvahs are important. Like Parashat Shlach teaches us. But at the same time, you have the opposite person that says, you know, I just do the mitzvah. I do the mitzvah, I'm done. No, you're not done. You have to work hard for the mitzvah. You have to make it a lichtig mitzvah. You have to learn. You have to daven. You have to prepare. You have to be holy. You have to become a refined person. You have to make sure the mitzvah is a beautiful mitzvah. It's a shining mitzvah. Those two things have to happen together. So I was learning the sikha, and I said I wanted to dedicate it to Gimel Tammuz because it's a very interesting thing. This concept, this combination of Parshas Shlach and Parshas Korach, I'm just reflecting, you find by the Rebbe in a very extreme way, right? Both ends of it, you find a very extreme way. On the one hand, the Rebbe had this thing about mitzvahs, it was like unbelievable, the preciousness of a mitzvah, right? He always talked about Kabbalah, so you just got to be a soldier, you got to just do what Hashem wants, whether you like it, you don't like it, you feel it, all that, right? Also, he started a very unique thing. The Rebbe started a very unique thing called the mitzvah campaign, right? What was the idea? There is, you go outside, for example, and you meet a yid, yeah? And he has to do a mitzvah, light a Shabbos candle, or put on tefillin, if it's a man, whatever, right? What's the idea? He said, that is, the person might never become frum, might never ever become close to Yiddishkeit. You might never see him again, he might never see you again. He might never see any person again, right? But if you get a person to do one mitzvah, it's infinite, right? The pressure of one mitzvah. I mean, you know, I've gone a lot on the mitzvah tanks, right? In my youth now, I can tell you that there's not much kavona when a person puts on tefillin for 5 seconds because you're nudging him to, right? You know, you meet a guy, you're Jewish, you put on tefillin, the guy says, you know, yeah, I'm a bit busy. No, come on, it'll take you 2 minutes. Okay, I'll do it, you know, like that's for you, right? What's the point? I've explained many times, the point is endless. One mitzvah, can you imagine? One mitzvah, he does one mitzvah. Was it a lot of kavona? No, not really, right? Did he really want to do it? Internally, we believe he did want to do it, but on the superficial, he didn't want to really. Or he wasn't that interested in doing it, right? And he might never put on tefillin again, chas v'shalom, but the one time. So that pressure is just one mitzvah, right? Which is a very unique approach. Like he brought sources for it in early sources, but there were many people even opposed it. Like, you don't understand, what's the point of this? And the person's not even doing it for the right reason, he doesn't have the right kavana necessarily, and all right, many things. But there was a not power of one mitzvah is the most amazing thing. That's Parashat Shlach, right? On the other hand, an emphasis on learning, an emphasis on davening, an emphasis on, I mean, the great scholarship and every Fabrengen would always demand we have to learn more and learn more, we have to have time to learn and learning, right? That's Parshas Korach, because the mitzvah alone is not enough. As great as one mitzvah is, and as great as we should go to the lengths to make sure one yid can do a mitzvah, even if it's just one time, even if it doesn't end up becoming frum or anything, right? Doesn't matter, just the one mitzvah, that's worth it. On the other hand, you need Parshas Korach also. You need the idea that you have to have learning. It has to be kavana, and you have to work that you should become more refined, and you have to serve Hashem through davening. That was also a tremendous, tremendous emphasis. So you see the combination of Shlach and Korach. But that was a combination that Korach couldn't handle. But that's the lesson we learn in Parshas Korach, that we have to be able to carry those two opposites. And on the one hand, a mitzvah is a mitzvah. On the other hand, we need to make sure the mitzvah is a bright mitzvah. All right.